This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/NGP.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number 82. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Veronica Belmont.
Wait, what?
Oh, wait. No, I'm not. I'm Tom Merritt.
Bizarro World.
I'm Veronica Belmont.
I'm Tom Monica Belmerit. Tom Monica Belmerit.
We should do like Freaky Friday edition.
Oh, gosh. I just don't have the energy for that much thinking. That's deep.
Hey, the Kindle Fire's out.
Yeah. Hey, did you get one?
I did.
Did you?
I went out and purchased the hell out of it.
So I was told by everyone that you purchased the hell out of it. I was told that you kind of didn't really need one if you had an iPad and a Kindle already. Like, it was just too much superfluous technology.
No. If you have an iPad, you probably don't even need one. Mm-hmm. If you have a Kindle, you definitely don't need one. But
is it really all about the Amazon store integration that you love? Oh, by the way, this is the section of the show called The Quick Burns.
Yes, I don't love it, but I also don't dislike it. I think that if you don't have any kind of tablet, e-reader, media consumption, portable device, that this is a good one to get because it's only $200 mm-hmm. and it allows you to read all your books from the Amazon Kindle store. You can actually, with a little bit of trickery, it's not even that complicated, get the Nook app running on it. So you can get the Nook apps.
You can
read, free PDFs and all that stuff the way you would on a Kindle. And you get the added benefit of being able to access videos and things like Netflix, and you can play Angry Birds and all that mm-hmm. stuff. But it's really not a fully featured tablet. Don't think of it as a Samsung Galaxy Tab or an iPad or anything like that. It is like a supercharged Kindle. It's a media consumption device. And I read on it for the first time last night and really liked it. I liked it better than reading on my iPad because it was lighter than the iPad. They did a better job of presenting the text somehow. The smaller form factor just seems easier to focus on. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought it was really good.
So you would say in your experience of actually reading text, was it better than an iPad, but was it better than or the same as reading on a regular Kindle?
I think it's better than reading on a Kindle because I like the backlight.
But a lot of people don't like yourself.
A lot of people don't. So if that's going to bother you, then, it's no better or worse than an iPad in that respect. But if you like the e-ink because it's easier on your eyes, you're probably going to want to get like a Kindle 3G or a Touch or even the $79 cheapie.
Is there any kind of special Audible integration with it? Because Audible is an Amazon company?
Well, it's not special because they're an Amazon company per se, but it does come with the Audible app.
Oh, sweet.
So you can listen to your audiobooks on the Kindle Fire.
This has nothing to do with their sponsorship of the show. I'm just curious.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the nice things about the Fire is it's got the web and it's got an email app. So there's some more things that you can take advantage of while you're using it that don't work as well in the regular Kindle, if mm-hmm. you like that sort of thing. If it's all about reading books, and especially if you're not big into the backlight, the light up screen, if that wears on you, you probably want to stick to an e-ink version.
You know what's funny? I find myself feeling like the old fogey of e-readers now. Like I'm like the generation that's holding on to, I don't want a touch screen and I don't want a backlight. I just want my regular old Kindle. And I feel like I'm those people who wouldn't let go of books like 2 years ago.
Well, yeah, and we actually have an entire thread on that started by Andrew called Keeping Physical Books in a Digital Age. He says, I'm due to move soon with all the joys involved. My new abode, unfortunately, will provide me with less space to keep my stuff. As such, this has got me thinking about my personal library of books and what to do with them. I'm rather fond of physical books. I'm starting to seriously consider how to proceed. Do I dump my physical library and consider repurchasing ebooks if and when I should want to read any of these books again? Do I need to hang on to these works? Some of which, if I'm honest, I've only read once. And what about my nonfiction technical texts?
Yeah, I have that same problem. I do not have a lot of my books on display at home. And I find I like to collect first edition hardcovers. That's something I've been doing a lot recently. And I like to show those off. But I have tons of paperbacks and I have tons of books from college that I still hold on to because they were a lot of money and I'm not willing to get rid of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, stuff I collect over the years, like a lot of technology books and social media books and all sorts of stuff. And I have a very hard time getting rid of them. But now I find that I buy most of my books in digital format. It would be really nice if when you bought a hardcover book or if you bought a paperback book that you got a digital copy. So you could put them into storage if you wanted to, but you still had easy access to them at the same time.
Well, yeah, and I think it was Jenny who wrote it was Anne who knows of at least two IT publishing houses that give you the ebook with a dead tree version for a small upgrade cost. Of course, that's new. It's not going to help you with the books you've already bought. But I, for one, I love displaying books, especially older books, history books, reference books, maps, things like that. And it's funny, when I go to cull my library, I don't touch a thing in my nonfiction almost at all, especially the history and the literature and, you know, older stuff. But I look at my fiction, which is all trade paperbacks for the most part, and I'm just like, ugh, I just got to clear that out. It's ugly. It's all
that's
about
so
the,
funny.
It's
I'm the
all
other
about
way.
The look.
I did the same thing, except I got rid of a lot of my my nonfiction books, and I put them up on Goodreads for BookSwap.
Oh, yeah.
And I just never got them back and I didn't care. And I was like, I'm never going to read this book again. I might as well just get rid of it. But I have a very emotional connection with my fiction books, especially my series. I like to keep the entire series with me. So I have this whole dream in my head of when, you know, when I was a kid and my dad had this big library and he had all his different series up on the walls and you could just like pick it like you were in the public library and there were tons of books. And someday that's my dream that I'm going to have that in my house. And so I can't part with these books. Like I'm like a book hoarder. They're all in my storage space downstairs and I can't get rid of them.
I have that for some series of fiction, like Tolkien, like C.S. Lewis, Neal Stephenson. I'm actually getting that way about Patrick Rothfuss. And so those are hardbacks and I keep those. But most fiction I feel like is disposable. But I feel exactly the way you feel about wanting to have that big library just full of books that you can just take down and browse through and take a look at. And so I've been going to there's a great bookstore operated by the library in Novato, California, that's just extra books that they've gotten in donations that they don't need because they've got copies of them already. And you can find some great old versions of classic literature. And so I've been buying that kind of fiction and putting it up. But Scientific American actually has a story of how that will change your brain.
Really?
This was posted in our Goodreads forum by Mitchell.
It can alter your personality.
It can. The psychologists are basically saying that they appreciate the significance of stories. And just as computer simulations have helped us understand perception, learning, and thinking, stories are simulations of a kind that help readers understand not just the characters in the books, but human character in general.
Okay, this is hilarious. They have a TLDR version of their article. On the right-hand side, they have an in-brief section. So if you don't feel like reading the whole article, you can get the too-long-didn't-read version. So in brief, reading stories can fine-tune your social skills by helping you better understand other human beings. Entering imagined worlds builds empathy and improves your ability to take another person's point of view. And a love affair with narrative may gradually alter your personality, in some cases making you more open to new experiences and more socially aware.
Yeah, so you people are more empathetic and open to new experiences because you read.
Love it. That is awesome. All right. Well, you want to hit up the calendar? What's going on? What are the major releases coming for the next month?
Yeah. First of all, I just want to thank everybody. I started a thread on Goodreads, and I've had a few people email as well. If you see a book that you love that you know is coming out, put it in the thread on Goodreads and let us know about it so we can add it to the calendar, because we're always looking for those releases. And it's not – I think a lot of people have this perception that somehow all the publishing houses are feeding us the information, and they're absolutely not.
So, no. They don't know we exist, you guys. That's silly.
Exactly. So coming up November 22nd, that's just 5 days away from our recording date, Micro by Michael Crichton and Richard Preston. It's a posthumous publication. Richard mm-hmm. Preston finishing up Crichton's Micro. The Freedom Maze by Delia Sherman, about spending summer at a grandmother's house in the bayou, and she gets transported back to Civil War days. And Lightspeed Year One, which is a compilation from the online science fiction magazine edited by John Joseph Adams. You'll see all kinds of cool stuff in there from folks like Ursula K. Le Guin, George R. R. Martin, Stephen King, and others.
Awesome. And then on the 23rd, we have Theft of Swords, which we've mentioned a few times on the show. You know, the one where we go, they killed the king, they pinned it on two men, and they chose poorly.
Yeah, the one where we're talking all caps.
Yeah, all caps. On November 29th, we have The Kings of Mourning by Paul Kearney, the third and final novel in Kearney's Macht series. Sees the armies of Macht invading the Austrian Empire to avenge the betrayal of 10,000 30 years earlier. I always mess this up. Avenge the betrayal of the 10,000. I'm assuming right. That is some kind of army or group 30 years earlier. We also have Theme Planet by Andy Remick. Welcome to Theme Planet, an entire alien world dedicated to insane rides, excessive hedonism, and dangerous adventure. Operated by the Monolith Corporation, Theme Planet is the number one destination for fun-seeking human holiday makers galaxy-wide.
And that takes you all the way through to the end of the month.
That's exciting. Some good stuff coming up. I want to pick up some compilations. I think I need to... I finished Reamde. We'll talk about that.
Oh, good. Yeah, so okay. So we can. It's an alternate, so we can just kind of informally wrap it up. That'll be good. I'm into 1Q84 on audiobook, and I can't wait
Me
to
too.
Get started with the book we're kicking off today.
Absolutely. But let's take a moment to thank one of our sponsors. Audible and award-winning writer, narrator, and screenwriter Neil Gaiman have joined forces to publish in audio a group of hand-selected books that Neil thought were great books and would make excellent audio experiences. As the producer of these titles, Neil selected the book and the narrators he felt were perfectly matched and participated in the production process too. These titles bring to life Neil's vision and interpretation to each individual work, as he worked closely with the authors and narrators during the production process. He gives his insights into each book with audio commentary that acts as the introduction as well, and you can stream the intros free at audible.com/NGP. And if you're already an Audible member, you can choose from any of these using your normal credits. And if you aren't already an Audible member, you can purchase any of these individuals, any of these authors. You can choose any one of these authors and take them home with you. No, you can get one of these titles individually as well. So check out the list of books. He'll be selecting new books regularly and check back for more titles every few weeks. And once again, that's audible.com/NGP. That's Neil Gaiman Presents.
Customers of Audible do not get actual humans. Yeah, looking at this, there's some really cool stuff. The Minotaur Takes a Cigarette Break by Stephen Sherrill, narrated by Holter Graham. The Land of Laughs by Jonathan Carroll, narrated by Eduardo Ballerini. The Pavane by Keith Roberts, narrated by Stephen Crossley. And these are produced by Neil Gaiman. Like, he basically said, this is stuff that entertains me. Mm-hmm. So he got it from the Audiobook Creation Exchange and said, I'm going to put my Neil Gaiman touch on it. I'm going to shepherd this thing through. I'm going to produce it. And I'm going to pair up good authors with great narrators and put it together for Audible. So I can't wait to sample some of this stuff. It's good stuff. And you know what? If you're like, yeah, but I've got 1Q84.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking the same thing.
These are novellas. So at most, it looks like the longest one here is 9 hours.
Oh, nice. A couple of them are 7 or 8.
Yeah. So you can supplement there, which is good.
Well, we all enjoy Neil Gaiman over here, so I think that's a fun way to kind of learn about some new authors and hear some new narrators and see what Neil's interested in these days.
Audible.com/NGP.
All right, well, now it's time for Barrier Sword, which is our feedback from the audience, and we're going to kick it up with a thread by Andrew, and he said, do you list past reads when you join Goodreads? So this is kind of a Goodreads-centric conversation, actually, which is our main forums, and he says, I'm curious if most people added books they had read in the past when they joined Goodreads. I've read or listened to a number of works over the years, but I found the notion for trying to add books I'd read in the past to Goodreads a little odd. Whilst I could probably look at my bookshelves, Audible Library, or other such locations, ultimately, I think it would turn into a hodgepodge of what I actually read and listened to. So I'm curious how other approach this whole situation. How did you do it, Tom? I mean, you've got like 800, 700 books on your list.
No, I think it's only 400 some.
I don't think so. Oh, you know, maybe you're right. I know you had twice as many as I did, so you've got 472.
I was surprised how many people said that they just started from scratch, or they just put what was on their bookshelf and didn't bother going back. I had so much fun when I first signed up for Goodreads. This was long before we were doing Sword and Laser, too. I just discovered the site, and I was like, this is great. And I remember I spent an afternoon, and I used my bookshelf as sort of a launching point to remember stuff. But then, like, I'd see that one Raymond Chandler book I still have, and then I'd say, oh, right, but I read all the Raymond Chandlers. And I'd start, you know, I'd go off, and I'd start putting things in. And it was just fun to sit there and remember all the different books I've read. Now, obviously, I haven't put every single book I've ever read because my memory isn't quite that good. But it really was cool to use Goodreads as that search engine to kind of rediscover books and like, oh, right, I remember. I forgot about reading that, and I forgot about reading that. And something would set me off with one kind of book, like a psychology book that I had gotten into, you know, back in the mid-90s. And then I'd remember like, oh, and I read The Holographic Universe. Oh, and what was the name of that book that was about the split mind? And then I'd go look it up, and I'd find it. And it was just really fun for me to go back and fill in the back category that way.
I also worked off a lot of other people's lists. So I went to yours and I picked the ones that I read. I went to Felicia because she has like a gazillion books on her page.
Too. Right.
And so that's another fun way too, is to see the comparison pages and kind of be like, oh, this person read this and you also read this, but she read this and you didn't read that. So maybe you should add that to your list.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of great discovery tools within the website that I'm still figuring out from time to time. Let's see, what did other people say? How are they finding stuff? I closed the link by accident.
I did it too, right when you said that.
That's so like, funny. We're like, oh, the conversation's over. David said, David only recently added books, plus a few personal favorites. He could never remember more than a fraction of the thousands of books he's read over the past 40 plus years. So I know how that feels. Yeah.
Yeah. Will said that too.
And Anne said she started keeping track of the books in 2005 via her blog and later library thing, which I know a lot of people used as well. And you could actually import your library into Goodreads, so that kind of helped. But then you have to go back and delete duplicates and, you know, change your finish dates and stuff like that too.
And it was interesting, as the conversation went on, it sort of moved into logs and book reading tracking and other kinds of tools that people had used in the past before they started using Goodreads. I thought that was really cool.
One thing I was blown away by is a new member Linguana wrote that she actually kept all her listed books in an Excel sheet.
Yeah.
Everything she's read since she was a teenager, she's added on an Excel document and then had to go back and do that manually on Goodreads.
Yeah. That would be so cool.
That's pretty fun. Then you have all these different ways that you can sort your books. It depends on how much metadata you add into that sheet, I guess.
Right, right. It would be great if you could just import that in.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Scott started a thread called Biting Off More Than You Can Read and said, have you ever realized you've backed your way into a corner of too many books? Due to several conflicting promises and the fact that I can't say no to some people, last night I realized I need to read around 6 books before the end of the first week in December. and he lists some of the books, The Path of Daggers, Inheritance, Son of Neptune, Elantris, Last Child in the Woods, and Atlantis Found. Apparently $100 riding on him reading Atlantis Found if he can finish it by Black Friday. So some gambling involved as well.
Wow, that's pretty funny.
And he's doing NaNoWriMo on top of it.
Oh, geez. Yeah, we got to talk about that a little bit too. Yeah, so I'm currently reading or listening to 1Q84. I'm reading No Plot, No Problem, which is the NaNoWriMo guide. I'm listening to or was listening to Changeless, which is the second in the Parasol Protectorate series by Gail Carriger. I still haven't finished Machine of Death, so I'm still working my way through that. I never finished The Heroes, which is embarrassing, by Joe Abercrombie. And I'm also reading Medium Raw by Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And so
You are doing this.
Dude, yeah. I just downloaded Elantris because that's our book pick, but we'll talk more about that soon. Spoiler alert. I was looking at my Kindle today, actually, on the plane because I finished Reamed, and I was like, okay, what am I going to read for the rest of the flight? And I'm like, oh, man, overwhelmed. What am I going to do? So, yeah, I understand how that goes. Sometimes there's just too much good stuff out there, and it's hard to pick, and there's just not enough hours in the day to read it all.
Yeah, I just finished Life and Fate by Vasily Grossman from Audible. It was the BBC production. Really good. Not a sci-fi book, but fantastic book that takes place in the Soviet Union during the era of Stalingrad, the World War II era of Stalingrad, the Battle of Stalingrad. And I am reading the Steve Jobs biography, also sci-fi book. I'm kind of behind. Everybody else I know has finished it already.
Well, it's a little bit sci-fi if you take into account the reality distortion field.
There you go. That's true. And then, of course, 1Q84. I started on Audible. I'm going to be starting Elantris. I'll probably read that on text since I'm doing 1Q84 on Audible. We'll see about that. But and then there's books that have been sitting in my to-read forever. Like You Are Not a Gadget by Jaron Lanier. I got halfway through that and then got distracted. So it's just sitting there on my Kindle. I finally took it out of my reading and put it in to read again, even though I'd already started it.
Did you give up? You were like, this is going to have to go on.
I was like, well, this is just a lie. I'm not reading it anymore. I read half of it and stopped. So I got to get back to that. And lots of books like that.
Oh, I started also reading. What's the Nick Bilton book? What's it called? I live in the future and here's how it works.
Yeah.
I just started reading that today as well. That's what I ended up reading on the plane.
All these.
So I don't know. I need a vacation.
That's what this is about.
No, I need NaNoWriMo to end. That's what
you
I need.
You need more TV, movies, and video games.
All right. The Hunger Games is almost upon us. And the trailer came out and IO9 has a fantastic write-up of a scene-by-scene detailing of everything that's happening in this trailer.
Yeah,
and
if you really want to get spoiled, check out The Hunger Games. They even have a map of Pan Am.
That map seems wrong to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of different takes on the map. We talked about that when we read The Hunger Games as part of the book club. This one, I don't know. District 12 seems about right, but I don't know about the rest of them. Well, District 3 should maybe... Spoiler alert. I'm not going to say anything more.
Everything seems pretty dead on. Some things that they mentioned. I'll try not to be spoilery here, though. But her sister, the pin, the Mockingjay pin, for example, does not come from the same person as it does in the books. Effie's hair is not quite pink enough, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, she looks a little different than I imagined her, too.
She still looks the kind of scary, creepy way that I imagined her looking. I think the description is pretty dead on. And I love Elizabeth Banks, and I think she's going to make a perfect Effie. So I'm excited about that one, actually.
You don't see a whole lot of Haymitch in this trailer, either. In fact, I didn't think he was in it the first time I watched it. I had to pay closer attention the second time.
He doesn't look right to me. I don't know about the hair. I don't remember the hair being that long in the books. But
it's supposed to be longish, so that didn't bother me.
You know what's screwing me up is that I imagined Woody Harrelson as Haymitch when I was reading, because we had already known about some of the casting, but he does not look the way I envisioned him.
Cheers or something, right?
I don't know. I don't like the hair. I'm not a fan.
I have to say the only thing that really bugged me was when they showed them sneaking off into the woods. Mm-hmm. It just seemed like they were sneaking into a park. Like, I didn't look like the woods. I imagined it as like this gnarly, overgrown mess right up to the fence.
Oh, really?
And where they're sneaking in is kind of this open field in a way.
Yeah, it didn't bother me.
Yeah, that part those kind of things bug me. But anyway, there's a nice thread. Everyone talking about the things that they don't like and do like. John Paul says, I don't like Heimlich's hair. I thought he had darker hair.
Haha. You mean, he's calling him Heimlich. But
he's just being silly, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Jason agrees with me about Effie. And he says the only person who looks weird is Cinna. I wasn't digging Lenny Kravitz in the role either at first, but now I'm kind of used to it and I'm okay with it.
I liked it. It's definitely not the way I imagined it when I read it. Mm-hmm. But I when I saw that in the trailer, because that was the one thing I was a little skeptical about, I bought it immediately. I was like, no, the attitude is definitely right.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to do a great job too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we should talk about my little spoiler of the book announcement. We sent out a vote. You guys voted. You picked the book you wanted to read, and it is Elantris by Brandon Sanderson.
Not a huge spoiler since we have it up on the Goodreads
site. It's already on the page, so if you paid any attention, you already know.
Elantris is a standalone fantasy novel by Brandon Sanderson, published on Tor Books in April 2005. He's planning to write a sequel, but its release has not been announced yet. It is Sanderson's first widely released book. Not his first book, but the first widely released book named after the ruined city whose cursed inhabitants are the focus of the book's plot. The book focuses on three principal characters, and the experiences are strongly intertwined with often direct, which often directs the course of the plot. And a lot of the book occurs in groupings of three chapters each, one for each of the three main characters. So a little bit of that George R. R. Martin style of a chapter for a perspective, but more intertwined with each other.
Gotcha. That sounds. I'm excited to get into some heavy fantasy again. So I'm looking forward to this one.
I'm excited to read Brandon Sanderson on his own, not Brandon Sanderson finishing the Wheel of Time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It'll be good to see his own personal worldview in terms of his fiction instead of working off someone else's.
There has been several discussions on our Goodreads where people are like, can you give us more lead time in getting the book? And I've been very strident saying, but that's just faking it. Like, once we say that the book is going to be our picks, it's the internet. A bunch of people are going to start reading it right away. So we can't pretend like, no, everyone wait for everyone else. But I think what we can do is pick a finish date. So that if you're going to get this book from the library, you don't feel like it's worthless because we'll be done wrapping up by the time you can get it. So what do you want to set as a tentative, and we may massage it a little bit, but what do you want to set as the target finish date for a launch?
Well, the holidays are coming up. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Is that going to give people more time to read, or are people going to be too busy with family obligations? And
I was going to say we wrap it up January 6th.
January 6th.
And we might have to change that date based on our travel schedules with CES and all of that sort of thing. But sort of our first after the new year.
Actually, the first after the new year is the 2nd.
Oh, it's the 2nd?
So, and we're going to be gone at CES the week after.
Let's do the 9th. Should we do the 2nd?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking maybe we should do the 2nd.
So tentatively, January 2nd. You have until January 2nd to get the book and finish it. Do you think that's enough time?
I think that's enough time. People were laughing because we said we were going to pick a shorter book this time around. It's not that much shorter. I mean, it's probably, I think it's like a 700 word book.
It's 700 word? No, more word. More.
Pages.
Pages, yeah.
I did that with NaNoWriMo, too. I told someone that I had to write 50,000 pages.
Oh, my God.
And they were like, what?
I have to write War and Peace by the end of the month.
And I was like, that's not what I meant. My bad.
Well, let's wrap up Reamde real quickly before we get to the email and wrap up the show. I finished it up as well. Mm-hmm. What'd you think?
I loved it.
You did. You loved it.
I loved it. I thought it was so, especially towards the end, so exciting. And I liked so many of the characters. The only thing I didn't like was that I felt like the ending, it all wrapped up a little too quickly for me. For such a long book, I thought, like, spoilers. Like the whole last scene with the farmhouse, and it went on for a pretty good long time. But then all of a sudden it was like, and then someone gets shot, and then epilogue, you know, like a few months later, here we are at the Ryu. So I don't know. The ending kind of bugged me a little bit, but I thought there were so many characters that I really, really enjoyed. And I loved following the storyline as they all met up in the same place and came together, and how all these people met at the same time. Kind of bummed they didn't go more into Terrain. You know, I felt like that storyline kind of got left in the dust after a while, but I kind of understand too. I liked it a lot.
I liked it. It is not my favorite Neal Stephenson book, but that's not saying it's bad at all, because I think probably even if it were my least favorite Neal Stephenson book, it would be better than most things that I read. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't my least favorite. I liked it. I didn't love it the way I loved Anathem, the way I loved The Baroque Cycle. And I think the reason is what I loved about both of those books is Neal Stephenson is so good at taking topics and diving into them deeply, and then pulling out those essential elements that help you understand what they were really like. So in The Baroque Cycle, he's talking about something real. He's talking about Isaac Newton. He's talking about this era in world history, and making you feel like you live there, and like that you understand what it's like to be there in a way that you couldn't otherwise. He did that with Anathem in a weird way, because it was another world, right? An alternate universe. And you're actually, you know, getting to know these people, but you really feel like, okay, this is what monasteries must have really been like, and this is what they would be like if they were twisted in this manner. He does this with Reamde, but he does it with kind of action with guns, you know, with gun battles. And it's that same thing. It's like, wow, I really know what it feels like to be in a gun battle now. I don't really, obviously. If anybody's actually been in a gun battle, you can laugh at me at saying that. But I have a much better appreciation because he did that same thing. He researched it and he pulled out those little things that are stereotypes and said, well, this is what's real and this is what's not and this is what it would really be like. And it gave me more of an appreciation for it. I feel like, okay, that's somebody who's investigated this a lot, but I'm not interested in gun battles.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I thought Sokolov was one of my favorite characters that I've read in a really long time. And as I mentioned in the last episode, I think it's probably because he reminds me of Logan Ninefingers so much from the Joe Abercrombie series. I thought he was fantastic, and I liked hearing all the different ways that he approached battle, and I like his thought process and how methodical he was and thoughtful of his surroundings and what was going on around him and sizing up his competition and sizing up the situation. And I really enjoyed that point of view. Maybe I just play more war games or something, and so I was imagining myself in that situation. And I thought all the characters were really well written and fleshed out very well. Like I've had empathy towards all of them. And Seamus is probably another character that I just adored absolutely. And I had a total panic attack when I thought something had happened to him.
Oh yeah, great characters. Mm-hmm. I like in one way or another every character he investigated.
Can I
Jones. I don't like
yes
the
I understand
person,
what you mean
but
yeah.
I like that character. I thought it was an interesting character.
He was a very multi-layered, multifaceted type of character. But I wanted to read one of my favorite lines or one of my favorite little paragraphs. How do you say? Did you listen to the book or read it?
I read it.
How do you say Consor's name? Shangor. Shangor.
That's my guess.
Okay. Yeah, feel free to write in or call Songor, in and tell me maybe how to pronounce it properly to anyone who listened to the audiobook or knows Hungarian. Shangor?
I'm going to go Songor.
Songor. Okay. While Songor had been sleeping, Marlin had recruited several dozen other players to help him. Marlin slapped a function key, and the roster window expanded to fill most of the screen, then rearranged itself in a sort of hierarchical tree structure when Reemdi ensconced at the top. Your org chart? Songor asked. Orc chart, Marlin said. And I just love that they called it an orc chart. That cracked me up. I was laughing so hard. I was like, that is what I'm going to call it every time I'm in a raid from now on, my orc chart.
I agree with you that I wanted much more of terrain. It felt like he was building that up and we could have really gotten the kind of modern day snow crash out of it. And then it became a sideline, and I understand why it became a sideline. It was the MacGuffin. I get that. Mm-hmm. But I wanted more of it anyway, just greedily. And I agree with you about the wrap-up. It did seem a little pat.
And we never found out what happened with the war.
A little rapid, yeah.
We never found out what happened with the war. Like, we don't know how it ended. Did the Earth Tone Coalition win? Did the war? I don't even know how they were trying to say the war. I wanted to know more about that. I wanted to know what happened. Did Marlin get all of that money out? Did he not? Was it successful? I have one other passage that I selected that I wanted to read. This is definitely spoilery. So if you haven't finished the book, stop listening. This is when Richard is kind of, facing off with Jones. He could already picture the YouTube page. Dodge kneeling on a rug with a sack on his head, Jones behind him with the knife, and, underneath, the little video pane, the first of many thousands of all capital letters comments sent in by all the world's useless F-wits.
I like that your cat meowed right when you were saying
my cat is losing her mind behind me right now. She has been meowing like a crazy person for the past 20 minutes, and I don't know what's wrong with her. She's just wandering around in the hallway crying like a little baby, and she's got food and she's got water, and I cleaned her litter box. I don't know what the deal is. She's being attention starved, so I apologize for the cat background noise.
I thought she was just bleeping you.
She's censoring me. Censor cat. Censor cat is censoring. Overall, okay, well, I see what you mean. I understand your perspective on not it not being your favorite Stevenson book. I almost didn't think of it as a Stevenson book, and maybe that's I could kind of suspend that opinion a little bit more, because it is so different from his other works that I've read, that it almost felt like a different author in a lot of ways, except for the meticulousness at which he went at all of the subjects. I think that was definitely the same.
Don't mistake me. I liked the book. So I don't mean to damn it with faint praise. It was good. It was a good read.
All right. Well, we'll definitely have more discussion about it now that I've finished it over on the Goodreads forums, because I want to talk about it with the rest of the readers, because I was avoiding it because I didn't want any spoilers. But now I feel like I can participate a little bit more. So I'm going to head over there and start reading all the threads that people have been writing for the past 4 weeks or so. But do you want to head into the emails?
Let's finish up with an email from Nicholas, who says, a few weeks ago, Ian Tregellis wrote an interesting blog post about the upcoming publication of his second book, Yay! The Coldest War. Here's the link. He has a link to the blog and the full story. But to sum it up, he announced that the audiobook would be released on December 20th, 2011 on Audible.
Interesting.
So I thought we could add it to the calendar for the ebook, and then the Dead Tree edition will be coming in the summer of 2012.
Wow. That's really – I've never heard of anyone doing that before.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty interesting. So December 20th, you can get the audiobook, but if you want the print, you have to wait.
See, now this is unfair, because now I want to have Ian back on the show to talk about why he went this path, and I also want to have Brandon Sanderson back on the show to talk about Elantris. So I feel like I want to have them all back at the same time to wrap up all these new questions and ideas going on.
We'll have to see what we can work out.
Yeah, that's cool. I better finish 1Q84 then.
I know.
That's not a lot of time.
I'm just going to stay up for two straight days.
I finished book one. I finished the first
I'm pretty close section. To the first part of the four Audible files. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wait, the first part of the what?
There's four Audible parts. So, you know, it's like 46 hours long.
No, I have eight.
Oh, are there eight?
I think it's either six or eight.
Well, maybe there are eight. Maybe I'm... But anyway, I'm pretty close to the first of those parts.
Okay, so you're finishing up that first section.
I'm about 7 or 8 hours into my 46-hour run.
Yeah, now that I'm doing the new gaming show up at Twit, I feel like I'm going to be having a lot more time for listening to audiobooks. Yeah. Exactly. Most of that was driving back and forth from Petaluma, actually. All right, well, let's say hello to some new members. Do you want to go back and forth?
Sure.
All right, so we've got Nadine.
Duncan.
John.
Kendrick.
Jason.
Al.
Isaiah.
Roman.
Robert.
Sarah.
Mary.
Ed.
Michelle.
Don Paul.
Justinia. Justina.
Chip.
Davis.
Austin.
Mitch.
Belissa.
Brian.
Eric A.
Ryan.
Lexi.
Martin.
Joey.
Fiona.
LS.
Nicholas.
Suhail.
Joe.
Chris.
David.
Phil.
Welcome. Welcome to the book club. Welcome to the show and welcome to our wonderful forums. Start reading Elantris and we will finish it up, wrap that up in the beginning of January. So you've got your whole vacation or you've got a good solid month and a half to get through that. So hopefully that should be enough time. But you know, you don't always have to finish when the rest of us finish. You can always just hold off on listening to the podcast for a couple of weeks.
You can avoid the threads and hold off on listening to the podcast sections that deal with it and do it on your own time. That's the great thing about on demand and the internet.
See, if I could hire an audio producer for the show, I would do an AAC version that had chapters.
That would be great. Yeah.
So if we had spoilers, we could put in a chapter. I just don't have the bandwidth for
that. Too bad we're too lazy for that.
I'm not lazy. I'm just busy. So much stuff. So much reading. Oh, and how is your NaNoWriMo going quickly before we go?
It's been going really well. Last night was the first night that I'm not sure I did 1,600 words because the word count thing screwed up.
That happened to you too.
Yeah.
It told me I wrote way more words than I actually did. And then when I entered it in the next day, it said I wrote negative 302 words.
Well, two nights ago, I know I wrote like 1,800 words and it told me I only wrote 700. So I'm like, well, I know I wrote the right amount. And the total count was correct.
Yeah, the total count was.
And so then the next day I wrote and I wrote and I wrote and then I put in my number and it said, you've written 2,000 words. I'm like, no way. There is no way. So I'm like, well, the ones from yesterday that didn't get counted must have got applied to today. So I was trying to do the math in my head and I was like, I don't know. I'm still ahead of pace. I'm just going to go. But yeah, this one's been hard. I'm not getting the look. Like usually at this point, I've seen to the end of the story and I know where it's going. And I'm not quite getting that this time.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm looking at my chart right now. And it's funny because on what day is that? on day 15, it jumps way high up on the chart.
Yeah.
And then the next day, it dips down just a little bit.
That's
I'm
weird.
Like, I didn't delete chapters.
No.
I swear. Yeah, I'm going okay. I'm trucking along. I'm at 31,453 words.
Oh, wow. You're ahead of me again. I'm at 28,661.
I wrote 3,160 words today, but I also had a 6-hour plane ride.
No kidding. Wow. Okay.
So I wrote a lot today.
That put me to shame.
Because I have to go. I'm going away for the weekend for two of my friends' birthday parties.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was worried I wasn't going to have time to write my normal amount when
I
was
gone. Yeah, it's good to get ahead like that.
So I wanted to do a little sprint and try to, you know, catch up as much as possible. Well, I'm ahead, but I mean, I wanted to have
right.
a little bit of wiggle room going into the next week.
Yeah, I'm going to have to write a lot tonight because my end date had been November 26th. You know, it says mm-hmm. at this rate you'll finish on. And now it says November 29th. So I don't think I wrote enough.
I'm the 27th.
Mm.
I'm going to finish this mother.
I know you are.
I'm going to do this thing. I am so dedicated to finishing this thing. It's not even funny.
Are you going
to
put it out?
I don't think so.
You should. Just put it out as an ebook.
We'll see. Someone offered to beta read it for me in return for beta reading previous works of his, but I don't think I can do that.
I'll beta read it for
You'll
you.
You'll beta read it for
oh,
me?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. That might be okay. I just want, you know, to know if... I know the story might not be as good as I want it to be, but I want to know if the writing is good enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I know I need to... If I had come up with, like, a good idea, I think it could have been much more awesome. I like my idea fine, but I just don't know if it's going to have the impact I want it to have.
That's what editors are for.
Yeah. They tell you what sounds good, what works, what ideas are stupid. All right. Well, if you want to get in touch with us, tell us your NaNoWriMo stories. The email address is thesordandlaser@gmail.com. The website, as always, is swordandlaser.com. And all of our forums are happening over on goodreads.com. Search for Sword and Laser. And if you want to call and leave us a voicemail, the phone number is area code 415-779-6735. We will see you guys soon.
Bye.